ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
Hi, I'm Patricia Carvelis, the host of the Politics Now podcast. 2026 is already shaping up to be another huge year in politics, with inflation remaining persistently high, lingering housing challenges, and now a royal commission getting underway. So join me and the sharpest minds at the ABC to cut through the political spin and bring you what politics means for you. That's Politics Now, and you can hear it on the ABC Listen app.
This story contains distressing content and includes some strong language. Listener discretion is advised.
So Charlotte and I are sitting in a kitchen somewhere near Balmoral. We're having a cup of tea with somebody who's agreed to meet us. While Charlotte's been busy interviewing Elise and her family, I've been working on making inroads here in Balmoral. And this person is someone I would describe as a helper. One of a group of people that we've met along the way who want to help with this investigation. They want this story to be told, but they don't want to be interviewed because they've got to keep living here and they're worried about a backlash. This person hasn't even told their partner what we're here to talk about. And I can't tell you exactly where this kitchen is or anything else about it, but what I can tell you is there is some pretty good slice being served. We're getting this helper to scroll back through Facebook for us because we want to find out what people in town were saying on social media the night where everything happened. And then suddenly, there it is. It's this album of photos from April 2016. This is the party. This is the party.
It's a 21st birthday party that almost everyone's invited to. Old friends gather for a good time. But everything is about to change. In an instant, at the end of the night, this quiet town's careful order will be shattered. I'm Charlotte King.
And I'm Andy Burns.
And this is episode 2 of Hometown Boys, a 6-part series from Background Briefing. Just a heads up, this episode does contain references to sexual assault and some coarse language.
It's a Saturday night, and it's a big birthday party for a girl called Cherie. You know, the drinks are flowing, the band's been playing, and there's this picture frame with nothing in it that's getting handed around, and basically, everyone stands inside the frame to get their photo taken. Everyone's got those little fake mustaches on a stick or fake beards, and there's a Native American headdress, which is totally cancelled now. Everyone's putting these costumes on and they're standing inside this frame and they're beaming out at the camera. Among them, you can see Darcy Trotman. He's the local establishment lad, you know, footy player, and he knows everybody.
Well, there's people from all ages, not so much little kids, but our families and all the rest of it, and
a bit of fun.
He was also Elise's high school sweetheart, and that relationship has now frittered out.
Just growing apart, I guess. I don't really remember anything too crazy happening.
And Darcy's there in a rainbow feather boa. He's having a time. He's having a great time.
It was a nice one. It was close to home, so it was pretty easy to get home. Yeah, it was going to be a good weekend. Bit of punch, I know, I remember that. But, yeah, didn't really worry me what I drank.
Luke Merrifull, the handy footballer from Elise's school, you know, who's a bit of a cool kid, he's working at the nearby mineral sands mine now. He's been pretty heavily involved at the footy club still with team selections and, you know, he plays for the seniors now, so he's one of the big dogs, so to speak. He's there. He's standing in the front of a frame. He's kind of gathered in with a bunch of other men from the town, old and young. The birthday girl holds this frame up over Luke so he can pose for a photo, and she's got a badge on her shirt that reads Party Girl. There's Sean Bloomfield, the wild bit of gear, kind of class clown. He's now working in Horsham as a diesel mechanic. He's there holding up a clown mouth and wearing the feather headdress as well. We also see some of Elise's good high school girlfriends, people that have become her kind of inner circle of girls when she was at high school. And Elise poses for a photo too. She's wearing a glittery hat and a fake mustache. She's got a cup of punch in her hand and she looks really happy. She looks like, you know, she's got a cheesy grin on her face and she's excited to be there.
I grabbed my swag because Sheree asked me to stay.
She's put on a nice outfit.
You know, jeans, top, boots, jacket, maybe a beanie.
And she's not living in Balmoral anymore, so she's come back to town just for the party.
I was living in Geelong and I was at uni. I finally felt independent. Like it was the first time I felt in control of what I wanted to do.
You know, she's excited to see all her school friends again.
And it's like dark, like it's nighttime, so you can kind of see like people, but it's like, you know, some fairy lights. There's like the light from the fire is kind of like flickering and like on the oldies, because all the oldies are gathered by the fire, talking their talk and drinking their beers.
This is somewhere that she feels comfortable.
I'd been to Sheree's place a bunch of times. Her mum, Jenny, was our school bus driver. And then like everyone my age that was there was everyone that we went to school with. Like, you know, I knew them really well.
So she sort of, you know, gets right into the thick of it and is catching up with everyone she hasn't seen for a long time.
You know, I was 20 and just like, oh my God, I'm going to get really drunk with my friends, have a good time.
The pop tunes are on and the fires are cranking and the birthday girl, I mean, she's getting on it. She's having a few drinks. Elise is also joining in. She's had about 5 cups of punch over the course of the night. But she's by no means paralytic.
So it was just kind of everyone from like school and footy and netball and like all the, you know, usual suspects just kind of catching up. So everyone was just kind of like chatting and hanging out, talking shit.
The guests are getting their groove on, you know, they're dancing in a circle near this local band that's playing. They're drinking stubbies and chatting to each other by the fire. And as the night wears on and starts to wind down, Elise is pretty tired. Like, she's had a long day, she's had a few drinks. She's not wasted, but she's ready for bed.
It was quite late at night, and yeah, I had my swag, but Sheree mentioned that she'd made up some beds in the caravan.
It's one of those old school 70s caravans. You know, the type with the pastel stripe that runs along the side and the nylon curtains.
Very thin mattresses, you know, like the mattress at each end and then like that musty smell.
So Sheree comes with her and Elise and Sheree lie down on one of these sort of double beds at one end of the caravan away from the door.
And then everyone kind of followed. And then there was like 6 or like 8 people in the caravan all being drunk and jumping up and down. And
the boys are just, you know, just skylarking and generally being drunken idiots. Sean Bloomfield sits down on the edge of the bed where Elise and Sheree are lying, and Elise tells him to fuck off, and not in a joking way, as in a like, piss off, Sean. I don't want you in here.
And yeah, I think, I don't know who it was, but they started, I think they were watching porn.
The birthday girl's boyfriend is watching porn on his phone at the other end of the caravan, and Luke Merrifull starts watching over his shoulder, and they're laughing and making a bit of a joke of it.
I wasn't watching it, so I wasn't really, I didn't give a fuck. Like, whatever they were doing, I was just hoping they would stop and let us sleep kind of thing.
A couple of boys drift back outside. The birthday girl is under the weather. She's had a lot to drink, and her boyfriend decides it's probably better if she sleeps in the house. So he scoops her up and takes her out of the caravan.
Because he was like, yeah, you should sleep inside. And we're all like, yeah, fair enough.
But what this does is leaves Elise in the caravan with 2 young men that she went to school with, Luke Merrifull and Sean Bloomfield. Everybody else has departed. It's just the 3 of them at this point.
And then I was like, oh, I don't feel safe. Because they jumped in bed and I was like, I'm uncomfortable.
The mood dramatically shifts at this point. Luke squeezes into bed beside Elise. So he's now between her and the caravan wall. So she's right up against him. And on the other side is Sean. So she's between them in this double bed at the end of a caravan that's sort of framed by this kitchenette thing. And it's a tight space. It's dark and there's no room to move.
Like, I don't think Shree would have been fully inside the house. It's hard to explain, but it all happened so quickly and I was so scared.
We think it's important to describe exactly what happened next, but it does contain details of sexual assault. So if it's too much, just skip forward. When Luke gets onto the bed beside Elise, she immediately rolls away from him. But she comes up against Sean because he's on her other side. Luke suggests a threesome and Elise says, no, no way. And then Luke puts his hands under her shirt and she says no and tries to elbow him away. Now Sean has his hand inside Elise's underpants and he's kissing her face and neck.
Once I realised where their hands were going and the intention of what was, like, going to happen, it, like, yeah, it was not good. It was not good. Ugh. Yeah. It was pretty fucking brutal. Yeah. Yeah, everyone knows what happened.
Luke gets up on his knees and he pulls off Elise's jeans and he rapes her. While this is occurring, Sean has a hold of Elise's hand and places it on his penis. Immediately after Luke finishes, he leaves the caravan.
It was the way they were talking to each other and about me that just made me feel sick to my stomach.
And just before he exits, he turns to Sean and he mutters something along the lines of, she's all yours.
You know, I'm all done. Your turn now. And he just left the door wide open, like, just zero care.
Elise tries to roll into the blankets, but is unsuccessful. Sean takes his turn next and stops only when Elise pushes with all her might against his chest. And then Sean gets up and he leaves the caravan too and joins Luke outside by the fire before they both walk home together.
And then they left. Door open, nothing. I didn't even know where I didn't even know how to describe the emotions that I went through in those minutes. It was horrific. Yeah.
It's after 4 a.m. and she's all alone on this thin mattress at the back of the caravan. Everyone else at the party has gone to bed. And the night air outside is quiet.
I just remember looking down and seeing that, like, I was naked half, and I was really confused, even though I knew what had happened because I was there, but I was still confused. And, like, immediately just, like, panicking, and I just started calling, like, anyone. I was calling people at university. I was calling people that were home, like at their parents' place, like just anyone that would answer.
The phone calls start at about 4:20. Elise calls a friend from the party first, but there's no answer. She then sends this Facebook message to a group chat, a bunch of friends from uni. It says, is anyone awake? I think I need your help. Answer your phone, please. But there's no answer to that either. So she calls Cherie's boyfriend. He's the one that was in the caravan watching porn on his phone. He's now inside the house, but he doesn't pick up. At 4:32, she calls Rosie, an old schoolmate who'd also been at the party. She doesn't answer either. And so at 4:33, she dials a friend from uni. No answer. So Elise tries Rosie again. They've known each other since primary school, and when she picks up, Elise is sobbing uncontrollably. And she keeps saying to Rosie, they wouldn't get out. They wouldn't get out. At this point, Rosie wakes her mum, Lisa, who's a nurse at the Balmoral Bush Nursing Centre, and they go and collect Elise from the caravan. While she's waiting, Elise calls another friend from uni.
She kept asking me, she was like, what's happening, what's happening, what's happening? Like, because, you know, she was freaking out because I was freaking out. And I couldn't really explain what was happening. But all I could say to her was like, I think I've been raped. I think I've been raped. Like, I'm so scared kind of thing. And that's all I could say, like, over and over again was like, this just happened kind of thing. And then, yeah, I got picked up.
When Rosie gets to the caravan, Elise is sitting there wrapped in a blanket. She's naked from the waist down, so Rosie helps her find her jeans. Elise tells her, they wouldn't leave. I told them to stop, but they wouldn't. And when Rosie asks her, who wouldn't leave? Elise says, Sean and Luke. They walk to the car, where Rosie's mum, Lisa, is waiting in the driver's seat. Elise is crying. She's confused. And she tells Lisa, I'm not a slut. I didn't want this to happen.
I was just staring at the dashboard of the car, like because I was in the front passenger seat, and I could hear Rosie and Lisa talking to each other and talking about calling my parents and stuff. But I was just staring at this glove box.
Elise's mum, who we're calling Catherine, is a few kilometres away. A short time earlier, she'd sat bolt upright in bed with this really strong gut feeling that something was wrong.
I just felt like I needed to get to her. It's the strangest thing. You wouldn't even think it was true, but it is true. It happened. That is just with me forever.
But she'd told herself not to worry and fallen back asleep. And a short time later, she's woken by the sound of the phone ringing in the kitchen.
And that's when I got up and thought, well, I better go and answer this.
It's Lisa Hutchins, the bush nurse, and she tells Catherine that something's happened and she better come over.
Lisa met us at the door and sort of told us what had happened.
Elise, her daughter, is sitting there and she is unrecognisable.
She's just in the kitchen, just sobbing. She's got a blanket around her shoulders. And I've never, ever seen my child that upset. And then she told us that Luke and Sean had raped her.
So this is this trusted family home that they're all congregating in to work out what's happened and what to do next. And Lisa, who's a bush nurse, is giving clear advice to Elise.
You know, keep your messages, like, all that kind of stuff. Like, keep all the evidence. She was really strong about all that.
Elise's dad, who we're calling Bevan, is there too. And he says the tension builds in the room as Lisa and her husband Tony butt heads.
Tony was just hoping that it all just, like, typical, just hoping it'll just all go away, just forget about it. Well, he sort of said, oh, the boys are just having fun or some shit like that. And that's when Lisa said, oh, what if it was your daughter?
We contacted Tony to ask about this, but he didn't want to comment. The woman who ends up taking on the case is Alison Manicky Brown. She's the detective on call for the Sex Offences Unit in Warrnambool, which is about 2 hours away. Alison is a 30-odd-year police veteran. She's done this job for a long time. and she asks Elise and her family to drive to the nearest hospital.
In circumstances of a rape being reported, we do request a forensic examination.
Alison's there to meet Elise and her parents when they arrive. She's like their first port of call. Elise is still wearing the clothes that she wore at the party, and all of those items will be taken into evidence. But first, she needs to be photographed in them.
For Elise, it was quite a traumatic time for her, and I could see that. And to ask people to take part in these processes at that time when you know that they're really, their mind is elsewhere, and it's a big ask, really, of anybody to do that.
These kinds of photos aren't public, but this photo is so important. It captures a moment in time, and I really wanted to see it. So I asked Elise, and she gave the police permission for me to go and view it. The photo itself captures Elise from head to toe. Her hair is hanging sort of long over her shoulders. She's wearing these little silver hoop earrings and this black floral top with white flowers, and her denim jacket and tight jeans and black muddy boots. But it's the look on her face which is what really stops you in your tracks when you're looking at this. It looks like she's walked away from a car crash or some other horrific scene that she's, it's like she's wearing that on her face. Her eyes are a little bit bloodshot. She's facing the camera, but it's like she's not really looking at the camera. Her eyes aren't quite sort of aligned almost. And they just look completely vacant, like they're not seeing anything. The photo leaves a really strong impression on Alison, the detective, too.
It gives a sense of where she was at. It was a very forlorn look on her face, and I do remember it. I remember it as clear as day, and it will be something that probably I will take forever with me, that photograph.
For Alison, that photo is just one of many things that she has got to do that morning. She's got to get her head in the game. She's got to get started on the investigation, and that is a meticulous process.
It's really vital that we try and capture as much evidence as we possibly can within that short period of time. So that might be physical evidence, medical evidence.
Already there's police out at the property in Balmoral.
This crime scene was a caravan, and it was located at a property within the town. And so, we needed to secure that.
Now it's crawling with police. They're taking photos inside of it, of the sheets, the blankets on the unmade bed, remnants of the party costumes, and they take the caravan and they actually tow it to Hamilton as evidence, and they hold it there because it's now a crime scene. And they also start taking witness statements from people who are at the party. And one of the first people that they speak to is Elise's ex-boyfriend, Darcy Trotman.
Oh, down home, the coppers come down home. Like, you know, I'd probably drove home that night, so I was wondering if I'd ran over anything on the way or they'd come to pick me up for something silly I'd done. And then they just started asking me what happened last night, a statement, all the rest of it.
And he finds out that two of his really good mates are involved.
I wanted to know what the fuck's going on.
And, you know, he's thinking, what the hell? Like, Luke and Sean?
Yeah, I just felt angry. Those folks were meant to be my mates more than anything.
So he calls Sean. He's been out fishing.
Remember, he's probably as shocked as... He sounded pretty shocked on the phone.
And at first, Sean's like, complete denial. Didn't happen. I didn't do it. Didn't have sex with her. Denials.
But Sean lies. He's hopeless. Talks shit all the time. But, yeah, he's always been the same.
But then he changes tack and says to Darcy, actually, yes, we did have sex, but it was consensual. And, you know, I'm dumbfounded that she would make this accusation, essentially.
Words to that effect.
Yeah, and he gets the same story from Luke. It was consensual. I don't know what she's talking about.
He was in disbelief, but he said that he had, you know, like, sex with her and all the rest of it, but, yeah, he seemed pretty shocked as well.
Darcy and Elise have broken up, so they're not on the best of terms, but it's not acrimonious, and he doesn't really know where to put himself with any of this.
Like, it's pretty hard for me to imagine them just pulling her aside and raping her, if that makes sense. But I did not believe it. Like, there's 100 different ways that, you know, a no is no. You know, I don't know, like, how do I say it? Rapes. You know, people picture that in a different way in a lot of things, but no, like, at the end of the day, no is rape. I don't know. It's hard to sit there and run all those scenarios through your head and, yeah.
Elise, meanwhile, is getting acquainted with a forensics nurse.
It kind of felt like I was in an alternate reality. I walked into this room and then they put this massive tarp on the ground and I had to take off all my clothes over the tarp so they could collect all the evidence and all the bits of hair and anything that could come out of my clothes. And then I put on a gown and then I lay down on this bed and she went over my body. Yeah, it was really uncomfortable. It was really invasive, to be honest, like, especially laying on the bed when they did that, because obviously they do, like, internal examination as well for, like, bruising and stuff.
When it's all over, she's given a toiletry bag and she's directed to the shower.
And she was really lovely. She was like, take as long as you need. And I was in there for a while, staring into space, just, like, going through the motions.
After the forensics are done, she sits down with Alison at the police station and gives her statement.
You don't realise how much detail these statements need. It's like, this happened and then this finger was here and then inserted here and this happened and then this, like, it was excruciating the amount of detail that I had to give about my assault.
Elise's younger brother, James, he's only just 18 and he's just at home trying to process all of this. By now, he knows that Luke is involved and that worries him.
Because I knew that Luke and his family had a pretty high standing in the community. So I thought, wow, this is going to be a bit of a... I just knew it was going to be messy, to be honest.
At this point, police tell Luke and Sean to come in for questioning.
It was arranged for them to be presented at the Hamilton Police Station at a particular time, and then I went up there to interview them. From the interview with Sean at that point in time, I think he realised what the gravity of it was. He came across as being shocked about his actions being portrayed as something wrong at that time, that what had happened was wrong in any sense. I'm not sure in regards to Luke whether he actually understood. Well, I think he understood the gravity, but his demeanour was very calm and not quite as shocked as Sean was.
They both exercise their right not to be interviewed, and so they're released from custody and police continue their investigation. Neither Luke nor Sean wanted to be involved in this podcast. With all of this police activity, word quickly gets around Balmoral about what's happening. Elise's brother, James, watches on from the sidelines.
I kind of knew straight from the get-go that there was going to be people who called bullshit, I guess, or who didn't believe my sister. I just knew that was going to happen. Because that just seems to be, whenever you hear about these sorts of cases, it's never kind to the poor girl involved.
The next weekend after the party, the Harrow Balmoral Southern Roos play their first game of the season. So Luke Merrifull turns up and plays. And he gets best on ground for his performance that day.
No matter how we're going, our spirits keep on showing, with victory in our
The birthday girl, Cherie, also pops up a post on her Facebook page. It's an album of photos from her party from a week earlier. And she posts this caption on the album. It says, "A huge thank you to everyone that came to the party with Dad and I last weekend for our joint 60th and 21st party. And thank you to everyone for your wonderful and generous gifts and cards." She signs it off with, "We had a ripper night," and then a series of smiling party emojis at the end.
I was thinking that some of my friends would message me and see if I was okay because they'd all, you know, had the police and everything, but that never happened. I left the party and I never saw anyone again.
Next time on Hometown Boys, cracks are starting to form in Balmoral.
Well, they were behind us, so I thought, oh, you know, we've got a bit of support here.
From then on, we were pretty much ostracised.
As people work out where their loyalties lie...
I was sort of in shock. I couldn't believe a person would be saying that sort of crap.
A respected local and key police witness...
Lisa and her husband, they had the nickname of the Mayor and Mayoress of Balmoral.
..takes an unexpected stand.
I walked out of there sort of shaking my head, thinking, with all what's happened, and I just couldn't see how she thought he didn't do it.
Background Briefing's sound producers are Lila Schooner and Ingrid Wagner. Sound engineering by Harvey O'Sullivan. Fact-checking by Justine Landis-Hanley. Music composition by Emrys Cronin and Joshua Curtis. Our rollout producer is Ben Sveen. The supervising producer is Max Chalmers. And the executive producer is Fanu Falali. I'm Charlotte King.
And I'm Andy Burns. To hear more episodes, search for the Background Briefing podcast on the ABC Listen app. Thanks for listening.